This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
South Africa's Health Minister Zweli Mkhize says the National Institute for Communicable Diseases, the NICD, has the continent's most sophisticated reference laboratory. As such, it will know of a coronavirus case in another country in Africa before that country knows itself.
That's reporter Darren Taylor on South Africa's expected role in tracking possible coronavirus cases across Africa. Details coming up. Also, President of France Emmanuel Macron is working to expand international support for the G5 Sahel force. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, South African medical scientists are expecting a blood sample from a suspected case of the new coronavirus in Ethiopia to arrive in Johannesburg for testing. Later today, the country's National Institute for Communicable Diseases says it has also noted reports of a possible case in Zambia. It is, however, confident that it has the expertise and technology necessary to lead the way in containing coronavirus outbreaks in Africa. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
South Africa's Health Minister Zweli Mkhize says the National Institute for Communicable Diseases, the NICD, has the continent's most sophisticated reference laboratory. As such, it will know of a coronavirus case in another country in Africa before that country knows itself, should the relevant blood sample be sent to it for testing. Mkhize says South African scientists and officials are following the same paths that have prevented the Ebola virus from reaching the country.
We would actually have details of a case detected in Congo even before it lands anywhere close to us here. We have been able to pick up any suspicious cases and screen them and test them and make sure that it is not Ebola, so that there is not a risk that a patient could be wandering around.
He says the NICD has developed and distributed clinical guidelines about coronavirus to doctors and nurses throughout the country and is sharing them with African partners. Mkhize is confident that coronavirus won't spread in South Africa, even though several flights from China arrive in Johannesburg and Cape Town every day.
Due to the current risk of importation of inadvertent cases of the coronavirus from Wuhan City, our port health authorities have intensified surveillance of all travelers from Asia, especially in China.
Mkhize says all international passengers will be screened upon entry for the very high temperature associated with coronavirus using non-invasive thermometers. Should a person show this and other symptoms, he or she will be quarantined immediately, tested and treated. One of the NICD's chief scientists, Professor Cheryl Cohen, says specialized coronavirus outbreak response teams have been activated across South Africa.
We have established an expert clinical group, which is led by an infectious disease specialist, and this group is really mandated to actively scan all of the emerging information about the best possible treatments for patients with this virus and then update the clinical guidance as information becomes available.
She says should this group identify a case in South Africa, it's ready to prevent the spread of coronavirus.
There will be immediate activities to identify all the possible contacts of that case in real time and start active contact tracing and monitoring of these individuals. These contacts will be monitored for 14 days to see whether they develop any signs and symptoms.
Mkhize says the government's aware of at least 35 South Africans who are currently in the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak in China, Wuhan City, and will take all necessary steps to ensure their health and safety. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Meanwhile, the World Health Organization says Zimbabwe is prepared to deal with the new coronavirus, but some health experts disagree. Rutenda Maweri reports from Harare.
WHO Zimbabwe's country representative, Dr. Alex Ndale Gasasira, says Zimbabwe is following the agency's guidelines that were put in place to deal with and control the disease.
We think that Zimbabwe is doing all the right things. As you know, the WHO has given some guidance to countries based on the evolving situation. And we feel that Zimbabwe is taking action in response to that guidance that the WHO has given. Screening of travelers who are coming in, those who are coming from countries that already have confirmed cases, they are being monitored on a daily basis. So that should they develop symptoms, again, Zimbabwe has, Minister of Health has identified areas where they can go, they can be isolated, they can receive treatment.
Health Minister Obadiah Moyo concurs that Zimbabwe has prepared itself to deal with the virus. Moyo says there's a lot of human traffic between Zimbabwe and China, so the country needs to be on high alert.
What we want to do is to make sure that we put systems in place which will ensure that we don't have any coronavirus in Zimbabwe. If it has to happen, if someone arrives and they have coronavirus, we must be prepared. We discourage unnecessary travel to China at this stage.
Zimbabwe adopted a look east policy in 2003. However, Moyo also says while they are taking actions to prevent the virus and treat any confirmed cases, Zimbabwe is also having challenges, especially with the state of the strained health sector.
By having this awareness and making sure that our people are made aware of that condition, of that virus, everybody becomes aware. So that's number one. At the same time, I can also say we've got some limitations because of the current operating environment in our health sector. We would need all our health facility to be fully functional. If we say present to your nearest health facility, if suspecting the infection, our staff is able to detect and manage and be able to assist, you know, the client would be affected with coronavirus.
A former Minister of Health disagrees. Dr. Henry Matsorera says Zimbabwe is far from being prepared should the coronavirus hit the country.
They cannot be prepared for that kind of outbreak when we don't have the basics within our system. We don't have the full complement of health workers in place. Even those health workers who are coming to work are working, a few hours a day or a few days a week. We don't have medication in the hospitals. We can't take care of simple conditions like malaria, like pneumonia, children's illnesses. We can't take care of anything. We don't even have paracetamol or basic antibiotics. And then to say we are prepared for that kind of major outbreak is really public relations exercise.
Coronavirus broke out in China last year, and at least 132 people have died. For VOA, this is Rutendo Maweri in Harare.
The former foreign minister of Burkina Faso, who has been jailed for his role in a coup attempt in 2015, has arrived in France for medical care. Djibril Bozelli was accused of being the mastermind behind the coup attempt to return former President Blaise Compaoré to office. His arrival in France comes as Burkina Faso struggles to contain rising militant violence. Kate Pound-Dawson speaks with journalist Nicolas Pinot in Paris about the latest developments.
Djibril Bozelli arrived from Ouagadougou last night in Paris. He's supposed to receive medical treatment. It's been known that for months he's been pretty sick. And it has to be noticed that a diplomatic source that I contacted who confirmed the arrival of Djibril Bassoli mentioned that the whole evacuation process has been authorized by the Burkina Faso government, and that Djibril Bassoli himself, who has to be evacuated in France to receive the treatment. We know that Djibril Bassoli has received a temporary release for 3 months from the Burkina authorities, and he's going to receive medical treatment here in Paris in a hospital.
Now, does this indicate anything about politics and internal politics in Burkina Faso? Has the government taken a lighter stance recently toward the two men accused of leading the coup? Is this just simply a humanitarian effort?
I think it has to be noticed that the case of Djibril Bassoli, who used to be former foreign minister in Burkina Faso, he was pretty, popular, especially among Western diplomats. And I think his case and the fact that he was heavily sick and he was in jail, I think it raises huge concern. He was sentenced to 10 years for participating in an attempted coup back in 2015 with General Gilbert Diendéré. And I think it would have been a pretty bad situation. Would have he died in Burkina Faso in his jail.
This development comes at a time when Burkina Faso is facing an unrelenting series of attacks by militant extremists. It's almost every day there are reports of villages or soldiers being attacked. What's going on what's happening to halt this violence?
You're right. I mean, since the arrival of the president, Roch Kabore, at the head of Burkina Faso, security situation has been deteriorating, and especially in the northern part of the country. We can name the last attack who killed in Suru almost 14 civilians. And you're right, army is also targeted by violent militants in the country. And it seems like even in Mali and Niger, we see that deterioration of the security situation. It seems like besides the presence of French soldiers and the UN forces in Mali, it seems like very difficult for local authorities to be able to counter these violent actions from the militants.
That was journalist Nicolas Pino in Paris speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson. You are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. As violence continues to ramp up in the Sahel region of West Africa, French President Emmanuel Macron is working to expand international support for the G5 Sahel Force, the united military effort to contain the violence in Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, and Niger. He is particularly interested in maintaining U.S. military support for the effort. Reporter Catherine Fields in Paris has been covering the issue. She spoke with VOA's Kate Pond Dawson about Macron's concerns.
President Macron is still, if you like, phoning around particularly his European allies to see what help these different nations can give. We've already got Estonia, Denmark, and the United Kingdom giving help in the Sahel. That generally includes logistics, particularly helicopters. When you're talking about the United Kingdom, there's been a few troops being offered by Estonia and Denmark, and there's a possibility that the Czech Republic will, of course, also send some troops. The big question really is whether or not Germany will step up and allow its troops to be sent to work alongside the French Barkhane forces. That is what particular Emmanuel Macron wants. He feels that Germany can no longer be a respectable ally, an ally with such importance in Europe, unless it's prepared to take on all these other roles, and particularly in the Sahel. The Germans, of course, do have problems with their constitution. When it comes to sending troops abroad, it has to be as part of a UN or a NATO force. So it's held back that way. But certainly, that is where Emmanuel Macron is at the moment. And he's saying very clearly that after all these years, after 5 years, the jihadist threat is as dangerous today as it was 5 years ago in the Sahel.
Now, he has made some comments expressing concern about the U.S. presence in the region. What is his concern? What was he saying?
The concern there is that as the U.S. starts reviewing its whole military footprint around the world, that there will be a withdrawal of U.S. special forces, U.S. facilities in the Sahel region. Now, in particular, the French are concerned about the drone base in northern Niger. That is very important in terms of intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance for the French. The chief of defense staff in France said that the communications that are intercepted from that base are just so important. And if the French lost that backup, that would be one of the biggest setbacks to the French in the region for many years. So that sort of intelligence, logistics also that's coming from the United States is so important. And that is why the French foreign minister and the French armed forces minister were really appealing to the U.S. Defense Department over the last 48 hours to please stay with them and do not do anything that could hamper efforts in the fight against jihadist groups in the Sahel.
At this point, has Mr. Macron gotten much of a response from the U.S.?
No, he hasn't. And this is, again, we're seeing, again, the French president who keeping on, but really it's starting to show how little support they are getting from the U.S., particularly from the Defense Department and from the American president, who seem to feel that there are other theaters, particularly the threat from the Chinese military. These are the theaters that are closer to home and more important to the U.S. than particularly the Sahel, where it really is felt that France is in a better position to be able to influence events in the Sahel region than the Americans possibly could.
Catherine Fields in Paris, speaking with Kate Pound-Dawson. A UN agency says most African countries are struggling to implement their sustainable development goals. Rutendo Maweri reports from Harare.
The United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, UNECA, says hunger, poverty, and lack of proper health services are still common in African countries. UNECA Communications Officer Sandra Nyaira says African countries are unlikely to achieve the sustainable development goals within the agreed period.
From the work that has been done by the United Nations on the African continent, there is evidence to show that most African countries and partners are off track to achieve the sustainable development goals within the set time frame. Particularly, let's say here where we are in Southern Africa. Southern Africa is struggling with inequalities. There are those who have, and they really have wealth. And there are those who don't, who struggle on a daily basis to find food to give their children. You look at them and when you visit the rural communities, you see someone who doesn't even have anything to give their children.
Nyaira says Africa has to increase resources that they set aside for the implementation of the SDGs.
What needs to be done by African governments to accelerate the achievements of the SDGs on time is basically to increase the amount of money that they put in the implementation of the SDGs, the money that they put towards ending poverty, ending hunger, ending inequalities, the money that they put towards making sure that everyone has access to good quality healthcare, quality education, the money that they put towards, making sure there's clean water, there's affordable energy.
The Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs, were adopted by all member states of the United Nations in 2015 as a universal call to address key challenges affecting the world by the year 2030. UNECA says African countries will gather in Zimbabwe next month for the 6th Regional Forum on Sustainable Development, a platform that will allow the countries to review progress, share experiences, and build consensus on how they can quicken the implementation of the goals. For VOA, this is Rutendo Maweri in Harare.
At a recent event in Silicon Valley, African entrepreneurs, Silicon Valley investors, and others gathered to talk about the state of entrepreneurship on the African continent and what is needed to help businesses thrive there. Michelle Quinn reports.
At the Computer History Museum in the heart of Silicon Valley, people gathered recently at the African Diaspora Investment Symposium to talk about the future of Africa business. Almaz Nagash is the founder and executive director of the African Diaspora Network.
In the past, many Africans, and especially people like me from the diaspora, we were not invited to the table to really discuss on issues that matter to the continent. So we said, well, what if we can just bring everyone together so we can have that discussion at the same table?
Remittances, money sent by people living in the U.S. to family in Africa, has long been a key way to support the continent, speakers said. But Nagash and others said there are other uses of diaspora funds.
How do we scale remittances so that it can also be invested in other people than our family? Supporting startups.
While many investors and businesses want to come to Africa, it can be a challenge to navigate, which is why African nations have been working on the African Continental Free Trade Area, said Joseph Matura, Google's first sub-Saharan African lead and now a minister in the Kenyan government.
How do they, with the different regulations, different countries, be able to get into the continent? So we are providing the platform that they can now use. They come, and as part of the Continental Free Trade Area, they are able to then go to many of the other different markets.
For the roughly 50 African entrepreneurs attending the event, this was an opportunity to pitch their businesses. Abubakar Kamara, an architect from Guinea, is working on a housing startup.
We're implicating people in the process of actually building their homes. You know, we want to change the concept of what is architecture? Because architecture has a lot to do with your identity.
Nenik Holis is the chief executive of a sports technology company in South Africa.
So we have a smart wearable that is sewn to the garments around the joint ankles of the athlete's garments.
Barbara Burungi Mutabazi runs Uganda Women in Technology, which trains female students and young women for technology jobs like coding.
Yeah, I've made some really good connections, especially in terms of funding, fundraising.
And I'm proud to be a second-generation family business.
For many of the attendees, the event was a welcome chance to talk about Africa's successes. Thelma Akeyor runs a Nigeria-based business accelerator and an investment fund for women-run businesses.
The problems that Africa's had for years is we tend not to talk about the progress and the developments that are happening on the continent, so it's been a pleasure to come here and share with people that live here in the valley about the work that we're doing.
Connections made at this event can be long-lasting as people look for ways to be part of the burgeoning African business sector. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, Mountain View, California.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wahibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, PJ Elliott, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, sub-Saharan African nations continue to struggle with their anti-corruption efforts. Corruption on the continent, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey!
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.